Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. And believe me, that is what we're going to be talking about this next half hour with a fascinating guest who we are speaking with. I believe he is in Galloway, Scotland. And I want to welcome Ronald Russell. He's the author of a book that is absolutely mesmerizing. It's called The Journey of Robert Monroe. And Robert Monroe was a man that not only was he very much involved in paranormal investigation, but especially the journey started because of his own out-of-body experiences. Ronald, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Now, Ronald, are you able to hear me all right?
A little bit quiet.
All right. Well, I'll try to speak as loudly as I possibly can. Ronald, I want people to know a little bit about you. You were born in Croydon, England, and you have been a speaker, a teacher, a lecturer for many different universities, including London, Oxford, and Cambridge. You and your wife are members of the Robert Monroe Institute's boards of advisors, and you had such a fascinating association with this very, very interesting man, and you have given lecture courses on states of consciousness for the University of Glasgow. You have authored as well as edited 16 books. You have your own material on the altered states of consciousness. One of them is The Vast Inquiring Soul. Your involvement with Robert Monroe, how did that all begin? He passed away in 1995. When did your paths cross?
We first met him in 1986 when my wife and I went to his Gateway course in Virginia. And at the end of that course, we stopped to sort of thank him, and, you know, just for a chat. And he said, we got a few minutes? So we said, yes. He said, right, well, hop in and I'll drive you around and we'll have a chat. And so we did. And he drove us all around the estate, up the mountain and so on. And by the end of that conversation, it wasn't so much that we said very much. It was actually being in his presence that was extremely, I think, was a very valuable experience in itself. And from then on, we went back almost every year to do another course. And every time we went, we spent time with Bob Monroe. And that was how this developed.
Now, the Monroe Institute, is that located in Charlottesville, Virginia?
That's located about 25 miles outside Charlottesville.
It's a beautiful area of country, and his journey is such a fascinating one. And you make a comment, or I should say Mr. Charles Tart made a comment right at the foreword of the book. He said, materialistic scientists have a tendency to become arrogant, like successful people in all areas of life, and look down on those who take the idea of souls seriously. And he said, at best, they see belief in souls as a sign of ignorance or stupidity, at worst as a sign of insanity or deliberate manipulation of the ignorant by schemers cloaking themselves in the garb of religion. I thought, Mr. Tart has such a fascinating way of being able to get to the point of saying, this is something. Your book about Robert Monroe is a true story, it is a story about a man's journey of his own self-exploration and trying to figure out what it was that induced these altered states that he went through. And for you to get the trust of him to be able to communicate with him so he'd say, here, write my story, that's a wonderful thing to have accomplished.
Well, I found him and what he did absolutely fascinating and extremely valuable. And although, he died 12 years ago, and in a sense I was wondering if anybody was going to take the opportunity to do his autobiography, to write about this, and it didn't happen. And I felt that, in a sense, I owed this to him, to be able to put as clearly as possible on the record what he did for so many thousands of people who came to the Institute and who used his materials, whether they came to the Institute to do courses or not. And this was really a part of my story.
You start in your book talking about how, before he started having these experiences...
You're very quiet. I'm sorry, we've got a bad line here, and it's a little bit difficult to
All
pick
right.
up what you're saying.
Okay, well, Bob Monroe, at the time he started having the experiences that he
yep.
had, he was really quite well off financially.
He yes.
happily married. He was listed
right.
in the Who's Who of America. He was involved in radio broadcasting and quite successful.
Yes.
However,
very successful.
As he was not what you'd call a conventional person. He was very unconventional in his thinking, even when he was younger.
He was very much of an individualist. He came from a comfortable background, and yet he chose to spend a whole year riding the rails as a hobo, you know, just picking up odd jobs here and there. One of them, in fact, was selling tombstones. And he never depended upon his parents. He felt that he had it in him to write radio shows, to produce radio shows, and eventually, after, in fact, a whole year of pretty serious poverty, he struck lucky, and that's where it began. But all the time, he was very much his own person. He really owed nothing to anybody. You see the picture that develops. And he very, very quickly... he became one of the leading radio writers and producers. He was one of these people who not only write the show, but he also produces, directs and produces the show. He did everything except act in it, except take a part. And within a very few years, he was, at the top of his trade and, in fact, was a millionaire. He could have gone on. He had the option of going to Hollywood. He didn't want to do that. He could have gone on leading this sort of moneyed life, who knows for how many years. But he started to have these completely, to him, inexplicable experiences, and eventually decided that this sort of thing was really worth exploring, and that's how he moved. He began to move out of the world of entertainment into the world of research and discovery.
You tell a story in your book about an experience that he had when he was quite young, and he was going to be going to a dance. It was a Saturday night, and he was short of $2. He didn't have any money. And he said, He became convinced. It was just as if it was right in his head. He became convinced that he was going to find that $2 on his way to the dance beneath a plank in a yard. And he found it.
Yes, he did. And he came back and he told that story. And he could never pin down, they could never quite understand how he knew. He just knew that he knew. And from every now and then through his life, he seemed to have these moments of knowing what to do, when to do it.
Now, he started having these unique experiences at different points in his life. He was having certain things. You talk about how he had an experience when he was living in Dutchess County that was of special significance to him, and it had to do with a well. Tell us that story, because his experience was something he didn't know how to handle. He seemed to have an extrasensory perception that nobody around him would have been able to even explain to him.
You mean that experience when, I think I know which one you're referring to, when he was living in Westchester, I think it was, and this well seemed to him to have run dry.
Yes, that's the story.
And it was a very deep well, and he descended the well. He went down, there were sort of steps in the side. He went down to the bottom of this well. It was very deep. And he had this a moment, first of all, of fear. And as if, you know, what was happening to him, and, you know, would the side of the well collapse? What was it? What was wrong? Eventually, he managed to restore the water, but as he was sitting there, he was overcome by this extraordinary feeling of, I suppose you could describe it, a peacefulness and of awareness that that it was that nature would look after him, that he was a part of the nature, and nature would care for him. And he came up out of that well with a sort of confidence that he hadn't really had before, a sort of knowing that, just to put it sort of in ordinary everyday terms, that everything was okay. Well, it didn't always turn out like that in afterlife, but broadly speaking, you know, that was another of these sort of formative experiences, I think, which helped him handle problems that arose later in his life.
He was, as you mentioned earlier, quite successful. He had written the screen test. There was a phenomenal amount of money that he was making, about $300,000 a year. This was in the late 40s, which in today's dollars, I don't know how much that would equate to, but it's a bunch of money. And a very special woman entered his life by the name of Mary Ashworth. Tell us how she impacted his life and what changes evolved because of him marrying her.
Well, Bob had a quite an interesting history of getting married. In his life, he seems to have married five times. And there's a neat story that his mother was at one stage, comparatively early on, was not very happy about this. But he said, well, at least he said, I always married my girlfriends. Well, Mary was a very special one of these. The first three, let's put it this, they didn't last very long. But Mary Ashworth, who was an actress and a singer, they stayed together for 18 years, and he had a daughter by Mary. She also had a daughter by previous marriage. So Laurie, who was his daughter by Mary, eventually succeeded him in running the Monroe Institute after he died. And they were very close for many, many years until his interest, his preoccupation in a way with his out-of-body experiences, began to, which at first she was sympathetic and listening to, but gradually she became, I think, anxious as to what was happening, and I think probably felt that she was excluded from a very important part of his life. And after, I think it was 18 years, they decided to separate. It was a friendly separation, but it was, something that perhaps had to happen because they were heading in different directions.
In 1958, I believe that that's when he had his first out-of-body projection.
That's right.
And it was about 5 minutes of experience that was totally unsettling to him. And, of course, nobody had a handbook on this available that he could read. But he really got into it because he found he could do it at will.
It took him some time before he could do it at will. The first few occasions, he really didn't know what was happening to him at all. And he thought he was ill. He went to the doctor. And his doctor rather sort of brushed it aside. He started to try to find out about this, about what was happening, and couldn't get any sort of help at all. And then he went, because he knew about Professor Ryan, the Ryan Institute, and his interest in parapsychology in this sort of area, he went to North Carolina, to Durham, it is in North Carolina, to see Professor Ryan and to ask him if he knew anything about this. And Ryan wasn't actually very interested in it. And the conversation didn't get anywhere. But in Ryan's office, there was a young man who was an intern who was a sort of working with Ryan. And as Monroe went out of the office, the chap came after him and said, "Don't worry about it, Mr. Monroe. I do it too." And that was the first time he realized that his experiences were not unique, that other people, at least one other person, had an out-of-body experience. And from then on, he began a sort of investigation into this experience. But there was very little literature at the time on this.
Now, there was...
Yes. He very much had to make it his own way.
He went through a lot of his own experimentation. He went through a lot of his own examination. He met Mr. Tart. He was also acquainted with a professor, Ian Stevenson, who
yes.
was very much involved with reincarnation theory.
He was the great reincarnation expert, yes.
So here you have Robert Monroe reaching out to everyone as much as he possibly could because he wanted to do something. And one of the most important things to him in his life, from the way you expressed it in the book, was to be able to teach others to get past the level of ignorance and fear relative to what we call paranormal experiences. When did he decide that he wanted to found this institute, which currently is very active? And I know one of my previous guests that I've had on my show, Maureen Caughill, who is a physicist, she's graduated from it, and it totally transformed her life and her thinking. I mean, she went from being a total skeptic to saying, "Oh my goodness, look what I'm able to do, and what do I do now?" When did he found the institute?
Well, it took quite a long time. If I can just give you the sort of build-up to this.
Sure.
After his divorce, in fact, not so very long after, he met the lady who was to become his ex-wife, Nancy. And they fell in love quite heavily, and he built and moved out of town. He'd gone, incidentally, from being a radio producer and director, he'd gone into the ownership of radio stations and then into cable television, and at that time he was based in Richmond, Virginia. And he sold up these interests, invested the money in this country house, and he built a laboratory, a research laboratory in the grounds of the house, and he set out in a very serious way to try to see what he could discover from about this type of this strange type of experience. How, you know, what did it mean? What was it doing? By this time, his book had been published, and after a slow start, it had become very successful, very widely read. So a lot of visitors came to see him in this estate. Whistlefield, it was called. And among them was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the astronaut Ed Mitchell, a lot of people of the who were, in one way or another, pretty well known in different fields. They're all drawn there by their having come across his work and being fascinated to see what's going on. So he set about seeing whether he could, in a sense, reproduce the state of consciousness that led to the out-of-body experience. And he got some help from a couple of young scientists, and they started to work on using sound, low-frequency sound, an idea which I think had been initially suggested to him by Professor Charles Tart, low-frequency sound to see how this affected consciousness and whether this could produce, what sort of experiences this could produce, and put it like that. And lots of people came in and tried, you know, he tested them out in the laboratory to see what their responses were. Now, at this time, he hadn't, the idea of actually forming an institute hadn't come to him. He was still totally immersed in research. And we're now really moving into the 1970s. And so successful was this research, and so many people were attracted to it. He got a group of people, he called them the explorers, who used to come into the laboratory and record their experiences as they listened to the various sound signals that were being relayed to them. And out of their experiences, you know, he began to see that what he was onto here would have, as he said, would be something of value. And he then realized that he had to come to some decision, either to carry on as he was or to take it into the next step. And the next step would be to build a residential institute where people could come and stay and experiment with this material, this audio material, to which he had now given the name of hemispheric synchronization, hemisync for short. And that is because these low-frequency sounds that they were developing could put the left and right cortical hemispheres of the brain into balance. And this was a particular state of consciousness which he saw as the starting point, as it were, for, if you like, to a further experiment. So in the institute itself didn't come into being until, let me see, I can actually with a little bit of effort, I can probably get the actual date for you. It was 1979 when the first program on the new site on Robert's Mountain, Virginia, the foothills of the Blue Ridge, when that came into being. By that time, he'd got the program himself into the sort of shape that really it didn't change all that much in subsequent years.
You have a fascinating section about Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross,
yes,
who even today is revered and appreciated by millions of people around the world because of her openness about talking about death and dying. And
right.
I was fascinated to find out that she actually went to the Monroe Institute, or went to Dr. Monroe, and was in the soundproof booth, and she wasn't experiencing what she had hoped, and then there was a shift, an acceleration of the process with her. And I'm going to read from your book. She said, "The sounds cleared her mind of all thoughts, took her inward, and she said it was like the disappearing mass of a black hole. And she heard an incredible whoosh, similar to the sound of a strong wind blowing, and suddenly she felt as if she was swept up by a tornado, and at that point she was taken out of her body, and she just blasted away. And she said, to where did I go? That's the question that everyone asks. Although my body was motionless, my brain took me to another dimension of existence, like another universe. The physical part of being was no longer relevant, like the spirit that leaves the body after death, similar to the butterfly leaving the cocoon. My awareness was defined by psychic energy, not my physical body. I was simply out there." And all of this experience went into a lot of what she did in her going home program. She seemed to incorporate so much of this into this program. What a powerful impact that this had. And I know we're coming almost to the end of our time. Now, the Monroe Institute is in Virginia. What is the highest objective of this institute with what it offers, and what does it offer in the way, Ronald, of courses and programs, and is there a website my listeners can go to?
Yes. Elizabeth had this, we got to know Elizabeth very well, actually. It was a very formative experience for her, and after that experience she did remain, as you say, in contact with Bob Monroe, and she did help him with one of his programs, the Going Home program. What the Institute itself provided, and still provides of people, is the ability to move out of their ordinary everyday consciousness, out of their ordinary everyday awareness, and it sharpens perception, it increases awareness. Whether you go out of body or not is now immaterial. Some people do, most people probably don't. And it gives you aspects, ways of looking, ways of thinking, ways of being, because instead of being locked in to your everyday consciousness, you are able to move into other states of awareness, moving from deep relaxation, increased perception, through a whole range of different states. And out of this, Bob himself developed a program called Lifeline, which was designed with help of people like Kubler-Ross to help individuals cope with the idea of death. It's when many people, it assured them that consciousness did not end when the body died, but continued after death, that you had, in a sense, a choice, that you could either, after physical death, move into shall we say, a haven as described by one of the religions, whichever religion you happen to belong to, or that you could go on and move into a space where you could be, you could, as it were, recuperate, recover, and then possibly move on to wherever. And the question is an open question, is why I said it, put it like that, because you can't dictate or decide where. And this course has provided for hundreds of people an enormous gift that it takes away from them the fear that is so often associated with physical death. Since Bob's death, his daughter, Laurie, who took over until, sadly, she died last year, she created several other programs taking people into different areas. Past lives, possibly, was one of them. But the same technique, the same technology, the same audio technology is used throughout. Also, of course, people who were not able to go to the Institute in Virginia could use the materials, could obtain the materials and use them for themselves, and again could obtain many of the benefits that this hemisync technology provided. I think that Bob Munro gave humanity an enormous gift, and I think that there are hundreds, thousands of people who are enormously grateful to him for the gift that he gave them.
Ronald Russell is my guest. We are talking with him via technology, and he's in Scotland, The Journey of Robert Munro. When we come back, I'll have a website for you that you'll be able to go to. Ronald, do stay on the line while we're taking a break so I can get the website from you. And I want to thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go away now.
Into the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
That 800 like number again, an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and for those of you who have been listening to Ronald Russell, we were able to talk with him in Scotland. He has written the book, The Journey of Robert Munro. Now, while we were off the air, I got the website that if you're interested in finding out about any of these courses, the website to go to is the MunroInstitute.com. That's M-O-N-R-O-E, Institute.com. When I was on my business trip in June, I had the opportunity to be in the Charlottesville area, but there wasn't enough time for me to go over to the Institute to talk to some people there. And it's a fascinating arena of research that goes on as we speak. And I've known a few people that have taken advantage of the courses, and the responses have been quite fascinating. So if this is an area of interest, this is a group of people that are sincerely dedicated to the principles and to the development of understanding and insights into the various altered states that people can experience. So again, the website is the MonroeInstitute.com. And so I invite you to explore, and who knows, maybe you will be able to participate in one of their classes, and they do have materials available for you if you're not able to go to the actual facility itself. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to call in and chat with me, here are the numbers to call in to. In the U.S., 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Our other direct line is 530-876-3222. A quick reminder, this Saturday, for those of you in the state of Washington, I'm going to be appearing at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo this coming Saturday. You can go to their website, which is BEPC. That is Bob Edward Paul Charlie .com. And, or you can just type in the Boeing Parapsychology Expo and it'll pop the website up. It will have directions. It's being held at an activity center in Kent. It is a wonderful event. I'm going to be appearing there. I'm in booth 6060, and I'll be doing many consultations as well as having a number of books there. So I invite you to come over and say hello, and I'm so looking forward to this because this is an organization that has been having the Parapsychology Expo for so many years that people really look forward to it. And they used to only have it once a year, and now they have it in the spring as well as in the fall. It has become so popular. So you'll hear all kinds of people speaking. You will have all kinds of activities going on. You will have an opportunity to meet such absolutely wonderful, wonderful people, including myself. So I invite you to come on out this Saturday, the Boeing Parapsychology Expo, and you just come on in and stop by booth 60 and say hello. I would love to see you. You'll see my bright yellow banner with BBS Radio right on its title, and you'll know exactly where I am when you see that. And if you're a first-time listener and you want to call in and chat with me, it's delightful. All you need to do when you call in, when I answer the phone line, is to give your first name or your initial. After that, I'm happy to share with you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me any questions you like. Also, don't forget, coming up in October, oh my goodness, I'm getting my plane tickets right now. This is going to be One Traveling Lady. I am going to be appearing in Las Vegas. I'm going to be I'm going to be in Alaska. I'm going to be in Southern California and New York City. So this lady is going to be with the flying wings of an airline, and I'm going to be just all over this country, and I'm really looking forward to each of the trips. So if you're going to be in any of those locales and you'd like to find out more about how to reach me, or if you want to have a private consultation with me, my time in each area is going to be limited, but give me a call, and I will be happy to touch bases with you, and we can set up a time if that's what you like. And my office number is 800-872-8852. And, of course, my website, I'll be having my newsletter, and you'll have all the information in my newsletter, which is going to be coming out on the 1st of October. Okay, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 for the U.S., Canadians, 888-815-9756. Well, as you all know, if you're a regular listener to the show, I have a soft, soft heart when it comes to animals. And I came across this marvelous story about a very special dog, and I had to share it with you. There are so many animals that end up in shelters, at the Humane Society. They're dumped, they're abused. Maybe people have litters of pups or cats, and they just have to get rid of them. They can't take care of them. Sometimes you have soldiers that are sent off to war and they don't want to, but they have to take their dog or their cat to a facility to find a home for it because they can't take care of it. There's all kinds of stories that you hear. And in this one humane shelter, there was a dog, and his name was Tino. He came to the Humane Society in Silicon Valley, and he was a stray, didn't know who he belonged to. And he had an ID tag, but they couldn't get the owner. They just weren't able to make contact. And so they checked the dog over. He was very, very healthy, and they were able to settle him in, and he had a special kennel classification. It was called Kennel 9. Now, this was a beautiful black and tan Siberian Husky German Shepherd mix. And most people weren't paying too much attention because he was, well, I guess they thought he was sort of plain looking. But this was an older dog. This wasn't a younger dog. And a lot of the people that would come into the shelter were looking for puppies or for little dogs. So he's a pretty good-sized fellow, and a lot of people just didn't have the space to take care of him, or he just didn't click. Well, the staff and the volunteers that worked at this particular shelter really loved Tino. They thought he was just the sweetest dog, and they would just spend so much time with him. Well, there was a period when a woman by the name of Laura joined the staff, and she became their communications manager, and she loved Tino, and she'd visit him as much as she could, and she decided she was going to find a home for Tino, one way or the other. And what she did, she showed his picture, she ran all kinds of information in various community newspapers. She featured him on the shelter's website. She just knew somebody was going to fall in love with Tino. He was just an absolute love. But you know what? Not one person responded to any of the ads. Well, Tino was ending up being the oldest dog in the shelter. Not only that, but he was staying there longer than anybody else. Well, Tina all of a sudden one day had a flash, and she said, you know what, we're going to change his name. We're going to change his name to Elvis. Well, on September 19th, it was Tino's 77th day at the shelter. Something special started to happen. There was an elderly gentleman, his name was Maurice, that came up to her and he said, you know, I'm looking for an older dog. I want a gentle dog who won't sit on my furniture. What did Laura do? She immediately went to Elvis's Kennel 9. Yes, that's what she said. I'd like to introduce you to Elvis. Well, the elderly gentleman looked at Elvis, and Elvis looked at the elderly gentleman, Maurice. Nothing happened. Well, Maurice was very sad. He was leaving the kennel, and he walked around to the courtyard where dogs were allowed to just run around. And he happened to look back at Kennel 9, and there was Elvis. Elvis got out of the kennel, and he ran out into the open yard, stood at the fence, and they looked into each other's eyes, and Maurice knew he had found his dog. Well, now these two are, well, lifelong companions, if you will. And Laura said she was so excited when she could put a notice up that day with these words on it: Elvis has left the building. You never know who's going to touch your heart or when. And this story touched mine. So the dear dog that had spent the longest amount of time of any time at this shelter found a home with someone who to this day just loves him with all of his heart. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Don't go away. Phone lines are open. We're going to be right back, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo has a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I want to let you know who's coming up this week. We have a powerful week of guests. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Boreen Banaszak. And we're going to be talking about, excuse me, your life is now. Ah, yes, Doreen is I'd say a protege of a very special lady who wrote a wonderful book, Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting. And this is what she is following up with. Lynn Grabhorn was the original author of the book I mentioned, Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting. And so Doreen has picked up the baton that Lynn left and is now carrying it forward, teaching others what Lynn was so generous to share with us so many years ago. And so this is Excuse Me, Your Life is Now. It is all about personally empowering you as an individual. On Wednesday the 26th, we're going to be talking with Daryl Hickman, a very famous actor who has written a book about acting. It's called The Unconscious Actor. And then on the 27th, we're going to be talking about spooks. Haunted Richmond, Virginia. Boy, they're loaded with them. And we're going to be talking with Pamela Kenny. She's going to be sharing with us some wonderful, wonderful ghost-busting stories, so we'll have a good time with that. And then Sail Into Your Dreams. Karen Merringer is going to be my guest, and we have just got so much to share with you. You're not going to want to miss any of it, so remember, if you do happen to miss a show, go into the archives. You can hear the show. You don't have to miss any of these wonderful guests and points of information that we're able to share with you here on the Donna Sebo Show, right on bbsradio.com. So just remember, go into the archives and you can hear it if you happen to not be able to hear it live. You're always welcome to join us. And give me a buzz if you want to chat. First name or initial is all I need from you. Have you ever heard of chitosan? Well, they have found, and it's spelled C-H-I-T-O-S-A-N. Now, this is a chemical term, and it is something most of us would not be too familiar with. And what it really is a carbohydrate, actually a sugar, a plant sugar from plants. It's entirely natural. And with its chemical composition, it is considered to be a polysaccharide. Now, it's produced chemically by plants, and of course they've found out so much about this. It's absolutely amazing. There's an operation a plant does called alkaline deacetylation of chitin, or enzymatic deacetylation of chitin, and or yeah, that's what I think. It's Chotin, I think. No, Ketitsin is what it's going to be. And the chitin is the main component of the ecoskeleton of arthropods, such as crustaceans. That's right. Those crusty little critters of the water. And it's also the endoskeleton of the cephalopods, such as squid, a snail shell. And if you can believe this, the cuticle of insects and spiders, of the sidewall of some mushrooms, of baking yeast, and of some species of lichen. And it's found in great quantity in plankton. Now, the word chitin comes from a Greek term to name a tunic. And in this case, it was representing the bodily shell of crustaceans and other invertebrates. And a crab, now, their shell, for example, is made up of 25% chitin and 75% calcium carbonate. Now, it's a fiber. It's a fiber very much like cellulose, but it has a lot of uses. And lots of times we're not aware of how certain components in various plants and animals or creatures of different types, they have biological properties that we wouldn't even give very much time or consideration to unless we were a researcher or a scientist. Well, apparently, it has a fabulous aspect to it that makes it very useful in all kinds of biological, industrial, and medical applications. And the ketosan is used in cosmetology, pharmacology, medicine. They use it in weight loss diets, biotechnology, environment, water treatment, paper and packaging, wood industry, textile industry, and also agriculture. Now, why do you think it'd be used in agriculture? You will see it in health food stores. Well, it has an antifungal and phytosanitary property that makes it a natural pesticide, an antifungal agent of a type, and also it offers a protective nutrient for plants. And ketosan's protective ability isn't just valuable relative to its antiparasitic action and antifungal action. It also is an extremely important substance in reinforcing the root mass of a plant and enabling it to thicken its stems. And you only need a tiny amount of it. In fact, you should, if you're a gardener or if you're involved in any kind of agricultural work, it is amazing the results that they have been able to get from this. You might want to check it out. I mean, here we are in the fall time of the year. Maybe you want to investigate what you can put on your plants, on your yards, so that when spring comes around next year, everything that you've got out there is really going to come up just absolutely fabulous. Now, in the U.S. here, they have done some testing on a section of farmland that's very, very sensitive to fungal infestations. And what they found with ketosan, it worked marvelously as an antifungal agent. And when they seeded the specific plots with ketosan-coated seeds, the yield was 20% higher than on the plots with seeds planted without the particular treatment. Now, you can use this, and you can get it as a spray at your local gardening shop, and you dilute it substantially for the use on indoor plants. And what it does, these products that have the ketosan in it, they mimic an attack to the immune system, and it forces the plant to fight off a fake attack, making it more resistant and productive. So if a real attack occurs, your plants will be able to fight them off much more effectively, and thus would not be as affected. So you might want to check this out at your local gardening facility. How is it spelled? It is C-H-I-T-O-S-A-N, and it's pronounced ketosan. But it's C-H-I-T-O-S-A-N. Isn't science wonderful? Just encourage your children to get into it because there's so much you can learn. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we have just run out of time. Remember, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You have got so much to offer this world. Don't be afraid to explore, to investigate, to take that aspect of life with a sense of adventure. realizing today is what makes your future. Enjoy it to the fullest. Live it with passion. Donna Sebo here. We'll be talking tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Joe Vitale. I'm one of the stars of the hit movie, The Secret, and I'm the author of way too many books to even list here, including The Attractor Factor and Life's Missing Instruction Manual. You're listening to BBS Radio, so fasten your seatbelts, get ready to be inspired and informed. You're in for a wild ride.